You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. And once again, it is time for your daily dose of recovery, brought to you by David. From time to time, we all have random questions float through our heads. A few months back, a question that crossed my mind was, what was the original goal for language? All right. Time to follow this question down the metaphorical rabbit hole and see what wonderlands of knowledge there are for discovering. So where to start? Well, what is the primary virtue of language? Why is it good? Because we English teachers say so, that's why. Now do the assignment. Sorry, had to vent at my students for a second. We now return you to your daily dose. I suppose the most obvious virtue about language is that it allows us to communicate with each other, which in turn allows us to cooperate in groups and achieve goals. A good example of this is a construction crew working together to build a house. Effective communication and cooperation within the group allows them to complete their work in an orderly manner. Cool. Language helps us organize into groups. What else does it do? Well, it helps us express our feelings and thoughts, allowing us to transfer knowledge. Cultural identity is generated by this sharing. We communicate things like social values, laws, cultural norms, and taboos. Language expresses and reinforces culture, and as a result, it does influence the personal identity of the people that live within that culture. This creates an invisible, but very much felt, boundary for what is and what is not acceptable behavior. So how did language originate? Until recently, a sensible linguist would likely answer with a shrug and a sigh, which are good examples of nonverbal communication. Bernard Campbell stated in Humankind Emerging, quote, "We simply do not know, and never will, how or when language began," end quote. Spoken language is kind of a cultural phenomenon, and yet no human attribute offers less conclusive evidence regarding its origins. Christine Canelli, in her book The First Word, says the following about spoken language. "For all its power to wound and seduce, speech is our most ephemeral creation. It is little more than air. It exits the body as a series of puffs and dissipates quickly into the atmosphere. There are no verbs preserved in amber, no fossilized nouns, no prehistoric shrieks forever spread-eagled in the lava that took them by surprise." End quote. While we lack conclusive evidence regarding the origins of language, that hasn't discouraged speculation. Many theories exist, and I cannot adequately tell you how much I enjoy the nicknames that are used to distinguish each theory from one another. They sound like something a little kid would come up with, which I suppose makes sense since most of us learn to speak when we are toddlers. But all the theories I'm about to discuss have been challenged and often ridiculed. So if you find yourself giggling or laughing out loud for the next few minutes, know that you are in good company. Here now, for your entertainment, are five of the oldest and most common theories of how language began. First up, the Bow Wow Theory. No, not Snoop Dogg. But man, I would love to know his thoughts on this theory. Anyway, according to Bow Wow theory, language began when our ancestors started imitating the natural sounds around them. The first speech was onomatopoeic, marked by echotic words such as moo, meow, splash, and bang. Any parent whose child went through a phase of making cat and dog noises when they were little might feel like their minds are exploding right now. Oh, it makes so much sense now. Well, hold on. There is a big problem with this theory, namely Few words are onomatopoeic, and these words vary from one language to another. In addition, many onomatopoeic words are of recent origin, and not all are derived from natural sounds. Next up, for your consideration, the ding-dong theory. This is actually a really old theory favored by Plato and Pythagoras. If you don't know who they were, Pythagoras was an Ionian Greek philosopher born around 570 BCE. He's a very famous mathematician. You might have heard of his Pythagorean theorem. Pythagoras was a metempsychosis, which means transmigration of souls. So he thought that every soul is immortal and upon death enters a new body. Plato was an Athenian philosopher who was born sometime between 428 and 422 BCE. Plato is the guy who taught Aristotle, another famous Greek. Aristotle is who created the rhetorical triangle, which we still use today to persuade people to agree with us. So it is totally relevant to our discussion of language. When someone tries to convince you with logic, their expertise, or emotional appeals, they are enacting Aristotle's ideas. The rhetorical triangle is something I talk about a lot in my English classes, so forgive me for shifting topics for a minute, but back to the ding-dong theory. This old theory maintains that speech arose in response to the essential qualities of objects in the environment. The original sounds people made were supposedly in harmony with the world around them. So why do people ridicule this theory? Well, apart from some rare instances of sound symbolism, there is no persuasive evidence in any language of an innate connection between sound and meaning. Contestant number 3 on Daily Dose of Recovery is the la-la theory. Otto Jespersen, a Danish linguist, suggests that language may have developed from sounds associated with love, play, and especially song. I wonder if the filmmakers of La La Land knew about this before they made their movie. Probably not, but you never know. Anyway, David Crystal, who wrote How Language Works, a book I had to read as a graduate student, points out that la-la theory fails to account for, quote, the gap between the emotional and the rational aspects of speech expression, end quote. Next up, we have the yo-hee-ho theory. Yo-ho-hee-ho, yo-ho-hee-ho. According to this theory, language evolved from the grunts, groans, and snorts evoked by physical labor, which totally makes me think of Tim Allen's comedy routine and how he would talk about men having their own language. Sadly, while Mr. Allen's comedy is timeless and joyful, the criticism against this theory is that though this notion may account for some of the rhythmic features of language, it doesn't go very far in explaining where words come from. Last but not least is my favorite of the theories, the poo theory. Oh, bother. This theory holds that speech began with interjections, spontaneous cries of pain, surprise, and other emotions. Language began as ouch, and oh, and woohoo! The problem with this adorable theory is not that it makes me think of the Hundred Acre Woods. No, it's that no language contains many interjections. And just to call upon David Crystal one more time, since my instructor did make me read the whole book, Crystal points out, quote, the clicks, intakes of breath, and other noises which are used in this way bear little relationship to the vowels and consonants found in phonology, end quote. Bottom line, there's something we can say against each of these theories. Now, I've been talking about spoken language, but what about non-verbal forms of communication? aka body language. Body language includes actions and mannerisms such as facial expressions, gestures, posture, head movement, and eye contact. People can perform these movements consciously or subconsciously to convey their thoughts and feelings, and according to some sources, body language constitutes about half of what we communicate. However, this can depend greatly on context. For example, a person does not always need to verbally say no to communicate disagreement. Instead, they can shake their head from side to side, frown. Even a really good glare can be quite effective. I actually miss those moments when a joke flops and a friend would look at me like, "What were you thinking?" Side effects of social distancing and wearing masks in public, but I'll gladly go on missing glares from a friend in order to protect the public health. Anyway, we all use various forms of body language in communication every day, which is then interpreted by others. I used to see students slouching in their chairs during class, signaling that they were either bored or tired. Now I have to make do with black screens on Zoom. It's so not fair. Who knew I would miss seeing students slouch in chairs? Body language can also enhance our verbal communication skills, and these often complement each other very well. For instance, if someone were to ask me for directions, I could point the way with my hand, or turn to face the way they need to go while I explain how to get there. These physical gestures work in tandem with my polite tone, friendly facial expressions, to convince the person asking that I am telling the truth. And of course I'm telling the truth. I would never give someone wrong directions intentionally. That would just be mean. The point is that body language plays a major role in everyday communication. Now, those were examples of conscious body language, but there are unconscious communications as well. And even though such physical cues are unintentional, they can still be interpreted by other people. Take, for example, the nonverbal cues that kids make when they are lying or trying to conceal something. Their body language and posture, how they hold their head, and a momentary flash of panicked expression on their face can indicate to parents or a teacher that they should pay closer attention to what's being said. Because parents know their kid's baseline or default personality, they can spot when something is off by noticing changes in body language. For instance, if a boy lies to his mother about where he is going, he might exhibit distinct body cues that he normally would not do, such as avoiding eye contact or talking more rapidly. Some other common situations where unconscious body language can occur is during periods of experiencing nervousness or attraction. And as always, this can vary from person to person. For example, someone might cough when placed in a scenario that makes them nervous, whereas another might touch their face or scratch themselves as though they have an itch. Though I think that's probably more pre-pandemic than current times. None of us are supposed to touch our faces right now. And before we conclude discussing body language, think for a moment about all the different ways that you show anger. You can scowl, glare, or use a unique gesture, like raising your middle finger. Gestures in particular that are relevant to individual culture fascinate me. For example, try holding up your index finger and middle finger together in a V shape to a person and ask them what you mean, and they will probably respond, "Peace." But the origins of that gesture trace back to World War II, when making the V shape meant victory. Of course, if you turn your hand around, showing that V shape with the back of your hand facing the person instead of your palm, well, then in certain cultures it means something very rude. And I can't help but chuckle every time I see a poster or a photograph and the person in the picture is making the peace sign incorrectly. Forgive them, Lord. They knew not what they did when they posed for that picture. So I've explored the virtue of language, the theories regarding its origin, as well as nonverbal forms of communication. But let me ask you, dear listener, are you a person who enjoys learning about words and languages? Did you ever set out to learn another language and have fun doing it? Or did you meet with disaster? If learning a new language didn't work out for you, please allow me to encourage you to try again, perhaps with a different language that holds your interest. Learning new words and languages helps us to think and approach life from a new perspective, and thus become a better person. This is because new language skills can have diverse effects on our minds. The multitude of ways in which new language develops might explain why the internet and social media are always creating new acronyms for texting and other shorthand speech. We as individuals develop our own jargon and latch onto certain slang terms because we like them. Our personalities enjoy the sounds and meanings of certain words and expressions. Any new language that you acquire about your native language or a foreign language contributes to you becoming a better person, not only because you increase the number of people you can interact with, but also because you open your mind to new ideas and ways of thinking that you may not have considered before learning about language. Ha ha! We English teachers have been right all along. I don't want to hear any more complaining about my curriculum. As far as we know, language is unique to our species because it is a way to express unique ideas and customs. Now, I, like probably most of you, have had conversations with pets over the years, and while it is true that animals have personalities, moods, and emotions, I have not yet observed any culture or customs unique to them. But I'm always keeping my eyes open. Before we leave this wonderland of language, let's consider this quote from William James, who remarked, "Language is the most imperfect and expensive means yet discovered for communicating thought." Imperfect is the name of the game when it comes to recovering from any addiction, if you ask me. We learn to love ourselves for who we are while working to improve our lives and spiritual health. I have often heard in meetings people say, "I'm perfectly imperfect," and it makes me smile to think of how true those words are when it comes to language and how people communicate. As an English major, I love language. I love words. I love expressing myself, discussing ideas, debating back and forth, offering up analysis, evaluations, and argumentations. And nowadays, they actually pay me to teach this stuff to college students. Woot woot! See, there's poo theory in action. I'm just a silly old bear. Language brings us together. It helps us connect and not feel alone. Going to meetings and talking about my problems with food and all the feelings I have inside that made me feel weird and ostracized has helped me find a better way to live my life and advance towards a healthy body weight. There are new freedoms and joys in my life now because of all the hard work I have done throughout my recovery journey, and none of that would have been possible without language. So, what was the original goal of language? I think it was to bring you and me closer together so that we don't feel alone. You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to tune in on Mondays for episodes of Recovery Buddies with David, and check back on Thursdays for future episodes of Daily Dose of Recovery, here on HP3R.